Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Oglesby?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Stout?
Here.
Councilmember Wisnowski?
Here.
So, the purpose of our work session tonight is to review the revisions to the chapters of the accessory dwelling uses and structures, and I think it's already on, Barbara. So, we'll let Barbara Kincaid, Community Development Director.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a continuation of our workshop on this. I don't remember the day that we did it last. Was it 3 weeks, 3 weeks ago? What you have in your packet for tonight is some of the changes that were made that were very clear at that workshop that you wanted to see those changes made. So I incorporated those into this draft. And this is the draft that we put out for the public hearing that will be at our meeting tonight.
What?
You hear
that? It's her keyboard.
Okay. Well,
that's because that's where the speakers are.
So just briefly, I just want to talk a little bit about sort of the process of about this. And we'll have an ordinance. I did do a draft ordinance, but after sending it to legal review, the ordinance will look different. David or an associate with him, they'll rewrite it. It'll be a replace and repeal of these chapters. I was thinking that we would do the amendments in the legislative strike through underline and incorporate it, but he said it would be much clearer to do an ordinance that was repeal and replace. Well, I want to finish the workshop on some of the big issues, just a discussion, casual discussion really about what I feel like we didn't quite come to consensus on. And then at your meeting, you'll hold a public hearing, take public testimony, close the public hearing, deliberate on what you've heard, and then I have some things that the legal review, some other tweaks to make to it. And then my hope is that everyone is going to feel pretty comfortable with the form that this will show up with the new ordinance and the changes that have been made after the workshop and the public hearing, and that you would have that in front of you to adopt on March 21. So we're not asking for any action tonight following the hearing. This is just really to make sure that, first of all, you can finish your conversation and some of the things that we left hanging, that that I can talk to you about some of the little, very good details that David Linehan suggested in terms of making this a really tight language, and then anything that the public has told you. So I feel like, the 1856 or accessory dwelling units is something that in this draft public hearing ordinance, we, at our workshop, we were all comfortable with changing the number. That you meant the Planning Commission had more allowed than what we determined should be allowed. So this ordinance, this draft reflects that discussion that we had, that we would allow two. One inside the primary unit and one that could be detached. We also felt pretty comfortable with consensus that there should have parking requirements. And so that's been left in here. The maximum size increase from 800 to 1,000. It seemed that around the table, everyone was pretty good with that. So the things that we didn't really, come to a conclusion about how we felt were whether we should leave the owner-occupied, that Planning Commission took the owner-occupied requirement out. Do you want to, since we need to revisit and maybe think about that owner-occupied requirement and the design.
So the owner occupied, so I looked at what was currently in the legislature about ADUs, and it would be good if we were consistent, and then it was to establish requirements for the off-street parking that require lot owners to reside or occupy one of the ADUs. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that we should try to be consistent with what state law is going to be, so that we don't have a conflict, because in the past that's what we try to do. So you might want to think about.
Did you say we fired the owner?
Yeah, owner occupied.
That's the draft.
We were kind of going with not to have to have owner occupied, and saying that we couldn't say if you sold your property that were they going to be able to then rent it out and rent all the units out then. So, but what you're saying now is to be consistent and say that the owner of the property needs to live there, and then they can rent
reside
out.
Reside on one of them. It doesn't matter which one, whether it's in the house or it's a detached one, but they have to reside in one of the units. Yes,
and I prefer that, like I stated the last time.
And we talked that there's a difference in zoning between a multi-unit, right, and these, right? So we're not saying that, let's say, you buy a house that has an apartment upstairs, you can't rent out both of them. We're saying that we had some discussion about that, right? Remember, because I was worried about the difference between, let's say, what's the difference between a triplex and a house with an apartment upstairs and an ADU in the backyard, right?
Right.
But the ADU is detached. Mm-hmm.
Right, in the backyard, yeah. Right.
Because, you would just have to live in one of the three units if you have a house.
Oh, same property.
And
maybe the attic
apartment and a detached one. Right. You just have to live in one of the three units.
So if there was only two, would it still fall under that, right? If it's like a house with an apartment in it, if someone buys a house with an apartment in it, are we telling them they have to live in the house?
Yes. Or the apartment.
Right, or the apartment. Is that consistent with the rest of our zoning?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am concerned about that. I can see an issue where it's set up with the owner-occupied section, and then family circumstances change, someone dies, there's not someone in the family left to live in that place. Then what happens to that property? I mean, does it then become a multi-family place, or does part of it have to be left?
Yep, that's a good point. Where do we cross that multifamily, single family?
What happens to that property if the person, the owner, literally cannot live there anymore?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's really the problem, main problem with the owner occupied is how do you even police that?
Right.
How do you even
know? Because we're not going to be checking.
If there's going to be any.
Well, I think you would know.
Utility bills.
Right, you would know.
Yeah.
You know,
you would.
There is a way. And we don't want to put people in a position of, you know, squatting, so to speak, or living in a place where they're not really supposed to. That's really awkward in the community. So I'm just very concerned about that. What would it come to a point where the property would have to be vacated? Because you can't rent out the bits and pieces without the owner living there.
Well, the code compliance part of that would be that if we're saying that one of the owner has to be habit living in one of these, and then we know that they're all being rented out, that would become a code compliance issue. They're no longer compliant with the zoning code, and we would work on. They would have to get rid of the ADUs. That would be
or rezone it as multifamily, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, if they rezone, rezoning it to multifamily probably isn't a viable path. And plus, remember, the ADUs are they're different than multifamily. Even though there's multiple living structures, we're allowing them to have joint connection. They're not connected to the water and sewer the same way.
You're right. That's what I was wondering, where that gray line is, right?
Yeah.
Where does a house that somebody puts an ADU on and then sells it, is it still a house with an ADU or is it now a multifamily?
It's a house with an ADU, and we would require we would require that to be on the title.
Okay. And if they wanted to change it to a multifamily, they'd have to go through rezoning and get new water and power brought in and that kind of thing, right?
If they're not, if their underlying zoning doesn't allow for them to multifamily, yes, that's right. They'd have to go through and try to get it rezoned.
Would you change zoning for one property, or would that be a neighborhood change?
You wouldn't do a spot zoning, so it wouldn't be a very viable path for that one particular circumstance. Yeah.
I wonder if the state's thought about that.
And I would wonder, you know, Aaron, when you mentioned, you know, what if a family, what if your parents had to move out of their house and into assisted living, I guess, and a family member moved into the house? I would assume that one, hopefully they were able to own their home, but if not, the bank owns the home technically, and they would have specifications for that house as well. Who can live in there, you know, and stuff. And I think if then the family moves into assisted living, I'm assuming they would have some sort of will or something that it didn't go into probate or something for that structure of who could move in there and who's managing it on their behalf. So it could be a family member or somebody that's taking care of the resident. And so
would that qualify?
I would think so.
Some codes will say, and in fact, my original draft of the Planning Commission had owner-occupied or family member. And then then you have to define family member, and the Planning Commission felt that got a little bit sticky too. But some codes do that.
But have you talked to our attorney about that?
No, because it wasn't in this draft for review.
Because that makes sense to me to say or family member. You know, if the owners have to go into assisted living, it would be power of attorney that would take over. Doing all of that until there was a death, and then you get into the estate stuff and executor. But I think if we can limit it to family member, like immediate family member or something like that, so like in my case, let's say Bob and I both end up having to go off to Sunny Village and drool in our wheelchairs, and so my daughter comes over, and she's now occupying a part of the house that is the main house, and I have an ADU. As my daughter, she should have the right to be able to do that. But I don't know, and this is where David would come in, at what point do lawyers actually get involved in any of that process? You know, you can have your home, and you can have people coming and going, without having any legal issues, right?
Yeah. It's only until we add an ADU do we...
You add the ADU, that goes in against your title.
Yeah, it does.
So, because it gets registered with the county. But if everything appears to be just functioning, unless you have a neighbor who blows the whistle and says, hey, there's something funny going on here.
Right.
You wouldn't necessarily know.
You might be finding trouble where there isn't any... overthinking the whole thing. So I would say, you know, from my perspective, I would certainly prefer to return and let him say what he thinks is the most reasonable. I don't think we have to dictate every single solitary detail.
Or it could be the code enforcement person gets notified that so-and-so died and they didn't know who was living in the house, but that would be handled by the estate, so...
Mm-hmm. Right. And they're the owner, right? The estate is the owner.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's the estate of the person that then becomes the... temporarily. They manage it.
So is David coming to the... Yeah. Well, that would be something after the close of the hearing. We might ask him about the... So I'm hearing that we probably want to be consistent with the state, leave the owner occupied in there, but if there's a nice way to say, or family member, immediate family member, whatever, that would ask him if he has experience with that.
Yeah, because if grandma's gone off to the nursing home, right, we want Uncle Jim to be able to come live there, right? Mm-hmm. She's not dead.
Or the granddaughter.
Yeah, or the granddaughter, right.
And it could just be somebody that moves in there. So it could just be somebody that needs to move in there, get the finances ready, get the house up for sale, and, you know, have cash for the grandparents.
I mean, yeah.
And
so there was two things in the estate line that it said require the exterior design or appearance of an ADU to be similar to the appearance of the principal housing unit.
Yeah.
But it also says limit the maximum gross floor area of an ADU to less than 1,000 feet. And we're saying 1,000 feet.
Right? We should say up to 1,000.
Up to or less than.
Yes, yeah. Up to or less than. Yeah.
And that seems to be consistent with some of the other cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they go up where they got all this anyway.
Yeah. But that is, those are the kind of details that David went through. And mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we are clear about
right.
Up to, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It could be less than
because
some people wouldn't
right.
know,
right? So far, after listening to a lot of this stuff and going out and asking some questions and looking at my neighborhood in perspective of how would this work in my neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And looking at it as if I had turned my garage into an ADU and then I may have a spot in the backyard for a cute little, you know, thing, and say all the specs worked, and the city says, yeah, go for it, and then I'm thinking, okay, well, how's my neighbors are going to look at this? And I know there's so many, you know, a time period that they can respond and chime into on this. So further looking into this and further discussing this with, you know, some residents and looking at this, I personally feel like now I'm more comfortable with just one ADU per lot.
No.
Knowing that, just because I'm thinking of, okay, if I turn my garage into one and I have one now, I have a possible two parking spots in my driveway, but then I have street parking, and you have to make sure you have street parking for those ADUs. And I'm looking at maybe Aaron being my neighbor, and here and now I have multiple cars in my small little neighborhood, mm-hmm. and extra traffic coming in my neighborhood. How is that going to affect like my neighbors in the areas in these small communities that we live in already, mm-hmm. that are already tight?
Right.
But then I look at like Sawyer Hill, maybe things are a little bit bigger, or maybe families, maybe not, but maybe some properties around that are in the zoning or
right.
that are a little bit bigger. I mean, now looking back, I'm more comfortable just one ADU on per thing, just giving them one possible family member to move in, or one extra income, or however it might be being used. Mm-hmm. I feel now looking back, looking at two, that could be a lot of extra traffic, extra movement in smaller communities like us, in smaller neighborhoods that we live in. And knowing that there's other areas and, you know, that we comply with other living areas, like we have our senior homes, we have apartments, we have, you know, other places for people to live when it comes to ADUs. But I do want to encourage, you know, extra income or having family members move in, or I just kind of put myself in that position and where I live in my neighborhood after I'm thinking, oh yeah, this is great. Two seems reasonable,
mm-hmm.
but now let's really look at it more. When I reread all this, thinking of myself, putting my house in that perspective, I didn't really care for that. If I was their neighbor or
right.
someone else was my neighbor, I wouldn't want to see that much.
You know, I've got a small lot.
I have a small lot.
I've got 9,900 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a place to put an ADU.
Yours would be in your house
if you chose. You still got to have your setbacks, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. And all of this would need to be approved through the planning department
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now, granted, down the street from me, we've got neighbors that have almost a full acre
mm-hmm.
of property
mm-hmm.
that they could very easily
do one or two.
Have an ADU in their house and then have a separate, you know, garage ADU situation.
And they would have room for parking, though. That wouldn't be out on the street and stuff like that.
But even, you know, I mean, on-street parking,
like, sort of.
Well, but not really. You know, I mean, on 4th of July, yes, you can't drive down our street. But the thing is that a little bit of on-street parking personally doesn't bother me. You go into Seattle, everybody
right.
parks on the street because
right.
there's no parking lots anywhere.
Right. A lot of these things are already addressed. Sorry, Jennifer.
Yeah,
yeah,
true.
In our neighborhood, really, there's probably not one lot in our neighborhood where anybody could do this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't gone out there with my pavement.
Right, right.
But I'm pretty sure there's not room on my property. And we have the biggest house in the neighborhood except for kitty corner housekeeper. There are going to be lots of places in the city that it won't work. So there will be occasional people who can make it work because they have space in their house or space on their property, but there will be many, many places where it really won't work at all.
Or they may be in a case where they currently have a detached garage and they want to, maybe it is a really tall one, and they want to do the ADU on the top of that garage.
Right.
There's properties, you know, like Sawyer that are currently, you know, looking at some of that. You've got some properties back over here off of Fifth Avenue, too. They're pretty good-sized properties.
We do.
So, but the thing is that we need to not just focus on our little section of Black Diamond and how much property do we have and can we do it at our place, because there's lots of different situations out there.
Well, I think one thing, well, two comments to make is, so the parking requirement is one, they have to have one off-street parking. They have to be able to provide, we're not saying that we don't, you know, so if presumably if they have off-street parking for then they're not going to hopefully be impacting, you know, the on-street parking.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is that the process, that two-week comment period, so it's not an automatic yes. The whole purpose of this process and putting this notice out to the neighbors is that if they have concerns, they write that they have their concerns. And those concerns, in the review, the applicant may have to revise what they want to do. We may come back and say, well, you know, you don't have enough room to provide the parking area and need setbacks. Mm. You have to.
I see.
Then we would actually have to ask them to modify or to put in their application.
Okay.
But so there is that's that whole public process and notice required. I mean, that's why we have that.
Mm-hmm.
There will be people that won't like the city's decision, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They won't agree that, you know, they'll feel that they were still impacted. So,
So when it comes to the public notification, I assume that you send out some kind of a notification to the immediate neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Within 300 feet.
Then there's some kind of a public hearing, is that, or
no,
not?
No.
This is just a public comment. I don't like the fact that someone who lives next door is changing her basement to an ADU, I can write you a letter and give you all the reasons why I don't like that.
Right. There's a notice of application. We published, like, we have received this application that goes to affected property owners.
Mm-hmm.
They have this time period to comment on that or to let us know if they feel they're going to be impacted by this proposal. It is an administrative decision, so there at least type two, there isn't a public hearing, but the city director looks at those and makes a final decision.
Mm-hmm. It used to be where it went to council.
Really?
Yeah.
Some places it would go to planning commission, too.
Because I just remember someone wanted to put a structure over their mobile home, and we got a notice for that, and we wrote, or we could have come to council and said our yeas or nays, and then it was the council's decision at that time.
Hmm. Aren't you glad you don't do that?
Yes.
There's a lot of things we don't do anymore.
Right.
We used to have to do that.
So our, you know, I'm glad that you brought up that, you know, you talked to people and that you weren't really all that solid anymore on two.
Can I say something else, too? Because every situation is going to be different.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
And there may be, because I think we have someone down the street from us that wants to do an ADU, but I think they're only going to do one.
Right.
They're going to have their main house, and then they're going to have their ADU.
Mm.
That's great. But now, if they wanted to create, if they had a big enough house to create an ADU, if they had a basement, and do the other one, as long as they've got the space, I don't have a problem with that. I think it's going to be site-specific.
Whatever the conditions
of the applicant's going to be, that's what then needs to be reviewed. And ultimately, it's community development department that makes that decision.
Yeah, especially with the, I'm okay with two, especially since we have the parking requirement, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you got to make sure you've got at least one parking spot per ADU.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you're not going to have a, you know, if you don't have, if you only got two parking spots, you're not going to add two ADUs.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So.
So then the other unresolved is, was really the design element of this, the design and appearance. And the mayor shared with you earlier that the state legislative draft going forward is still keeping that design.
Yeah, required the exterior mm-hmm. design or appearance of an ADU to be similar to the appearance of the principal housing unit.
So what happens to our ordinance when if the state passes one? Does it just become like?
Well, if the state passes one, we will need to go back and make sure that we can be more restrictive but not less restrictive.
Okay.
So we'll just need to make sure.
So that's why we want to be consistent. Yep. We don't have to change it if we don't have to.
Right.
Well, what I was wondering is, if they pass this, does this one just become null and void and we're wasting time?
No. It's fine, and we're pretty close. I don't, you know, we've been tracking this bill, and we're pretty close with what
the intent is
and what will likely get passed. So the thing with the design and appearance, though, is in 1850, which is also a chapter that we have these amendments, because, you know, you've got your accessory uses and structures and an accessory dwelling unit, and 1856 is that special type of accessory structure. We left design elements and compatibility in, so accessory structures, a garage, we're saying has to be compatible with the primary structure, but then we took it out of the ADU. So that's a little bit inconsistent. Mm. I feel like we need to decide what we're going to do across the board.
I think it should be complementary to what is already on the property.
Who gets to decide what's complimentary?
Well, why don't we flip to the language in 1850 and see how we feel about that? It's arbitrary. You know, there's sort of an arbitrary thing.
That's that eye of the beholder thing, right?
It really is. And so you look at 1850, well, it's on the first page of mine, but it's 1850-020-D.
Well, I guess you could look at, let's just put the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents' nice little yellow house right across from the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the area where they're supposed to stay, old town, historic looking.
Mm.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And they're not old town historic looking. I mean, they're very nice structures.
Mm-hmm.
You mean the school?
And, yeah, my parents' house. It doesn't look like the old town.
It's not a craftsman style.
Right? So, I mean, but it fits in. So I think it's all about who's at City Hall looking at the design and saying, okay, I think, you know, this looks really good. It fits in. Your container that you want to bring in, like Costco, doesn't really fit in our area today.
On top of your garage roof.
No.
Or Starbucks or whatever that you want to do. So I think it's whoever that is hired at City Hall is the one that makes that decision and says, yes, this complements your place, or it doesn't because of this roof line or whatever.
Whatever the design standard.
Yeah, and then,
that's
you
a
know,
really cool design for a container.
Uh-huh.
Shoot me in the foot.
Well, especially like the elementary school originally was supposed to look like the old high school.
Yeah.
It was going to be a two-story brick facade.
Uh-huh.
But that's not
curved windows and stuff.
That's not what came across their desk. So.
I think what they did do is they used materials from the high school. They have beams and the sign out in the front.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
They're made out of materials from the old school.
Yeah, and we see the same thing at Chahoma High School. Kind of did the same thing. I don't find that horribly offensive. We don't have, even in Moldtown, where there's newer structures like your mom and dad's house. There's very few homes that look like the old houses. You know,
no,
because
they're all miner shacks.
And they're all much bigger now, and even the old miner shacks here on 3rd Avenue, most of them have been heavily remodeled over the last 100 years. So I think as long as it's aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm. That's so subjective.
I know it is. I mean, we can say, and that's their design standards.
Right.
You know, we're not the ones that are going to dictate to community development what their design standards are.
Yeah.
Well, you have, that's policy. We really need to, design standards will be coming up later on. I don't know if we'll get to it this year, but we are putting a lot into, you know, we're putting a lot more emphasis on those design standards and guidelines. They are adopted in code. And they're pretty good, but it's been a lot. They were, I don't know when they were written, quite a long time ago, and everybody kind of ignored them.
But I think it's just so much easier to do it right the first time and get placing structures throughout the city than have to go back and say that thing was a miserable eyesore. Let's never let that happen again. You know, why would we do that? I think it is prudent to spend the time and effort to really come up with, you know, you can't say every single style or every single color or whatever.
Yeah, but you can do color. You can do color.
So your house, your room does.
The city of Bellevue has, or they used to, they have a paint code and for the commercial, not necessarily residential.
I can see commercial,
but commercial. So, so you don't have the bright blue commercial building next to
bright
the bright pink, and then there's the bright orange. Yeah. So, you know, the city of Bellevue's is all various tones of beige,
like maple down there.
And I suppose they're the same way. So there is something to be said about doing that. Because I remember years ago.
And the thing
ago,
is, do you want to be consistent with what's in 1850?
Exactly. Yep. No, 1850 is kind of a soft punt. It just talks about, you're going to ensure the structure is architecturally and aesthetically in harmony with the surrounding. I had area. David said you should say structure, and he's right. It's similar in height, but that's pretty loose. If you compare that language to the 1856 language that we crossed out of 1856, 030, and then you're going to go down to H, design and appear. They crossed out H. It's a lot more prescriptive.
It
gets into talking about that they're going to have matching exterior materials and so on. Which way do you feel would be a better approach?
So why were we going to delete that? Did we decide that? Because personally, I think that needs to be in here.
The Planning Commission, some of this is the Planning Commission recommendation. Changes from our last workshop.
Okay.
The Planning Commission's recommendation wanted to delete that.
But you could replicate 1850-020 here so that at least it's consistent from this.
Gives you more flexibility.
And it's consistent.
Yes, yeah. And the reason why I do like that is that approach is because then remember we have that public comment. So we could hear from the neighbor that, you know, maybe I think, yeah, this seems like it's, you know, one harmony with the surrounding structure, but then the neighbor is right in and say, no, this is a real eyesore. So we can take that comment into consideration and ask the applicant to modify.
And I would assume, I'm using a different neighbor. We have a neighbor on the north side. Well, because the neighbor on the north side had a detached structure that looked like a garage, but it's not. It's just a shop or just a structure.
Mm-hmm.
So the previous owner wanted to make it look better.
Mm-hmm.
And so the siding's all painted the same color as the house. The roofing material is the same as what's on the house. Really upgraded the exterior appearance of it, and so I would expect if somebody's doing an ADU, I mean they couldn't do it, but if they chose to make that an ADU, it's aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
It matches the house,
mm-hmm.
And it's not an eyesore in the neighborhood.
I would say that the requirement that's crossed out for matching exterior materials is probably pretty easy to do. Someone, you know, might be tearing their hair and say, you don't know what you're talking about. But other structural things, such as the pitch of the roof, that is something that could really hogtie a person. If you have to have the same pitch, you might end up with a really tall structure that's not going to fit into my thing. Right? If you're already starting out with it, right, you know, really steep, and you're trying to fit that roof onto whatever little thousand square foot structure you're talking about. So I would lean toward talking about matching materials and appearance more than structural matchy-matchy measurement of
roof pitches.
So, I mean, you can do a lot with white paint next to white paint. Or, you know, green trim. Or whatever it is that you're talking about versus having to really have a 12.
Yeah.
So are we saying put H back in, but just tweak it a little bit?
That maybe H is okay, going to be designed so that to the degree reasonably feasible, the appearance is consistent with that of the primary residence. At a minimum, the new exterior construction associated with creating the accessory dwelling should match the existing. So here's where the rubber hits the road. I was saying it should match the existing materials and design.
I would love
like a line
and match. Match is pretty
similar.
Compatible is
compatible.
Maybe complement.
Complementary. Because matches, that's a really hard word.
Well, here's it. So if you look, if you go back and look at 18.50.020, it says in harmony.
Yeah. There you go.
Now we can just say that.
I just think that maybe you should substitute this into H, and then it's not as restrictive, and it's in harmony with what you're doing.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, because, you know, some people's homes were built in the 90s or late 80s, and maybe what they have on their siding isn't what they want to use. Maybe they want to use now hardy plank or something else.
Yeah, they might not want vinyl.
Well, but the thing is, but if you've got a horizontal vinyl siding on your main structure and you're building your ADU, maybe you want to use hardy plank instead. You would still do horizontal siding. It may not look exactly the same because it's a different material.
But it's in harmony.
Well, but yours is just, you're a house of the 70s.
That is
wiring. Correct.
So I think we could do this like the mayor just said.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, too, though, when you talk about 18.50.020D1, it is referring, you'd have to kind of revise something a little bit.
But right,
take out that kind of reference. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
You're aiming for the same kind of open, some flexibility, but saying that we're going to review it to make sure that it's in harmony.
Right.
It's,
sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And to be consistent across our code is, I think, really important, too.
Because if the state one's going to say that it has to be in harmony, we can't. Doesn't do us any good to say, I mean, anything less restrictive, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Right.
As much as I think it would be neat to have, like, an ADU that contrasts your home, right?
I agree.
Right?
Remember,
just from a design point of view.
One can be in harmony.
Yeah.
Cool. Good point.
So we could take our container and put some harmony color and designs to it.
And hardy plank it first.
Hardy plank it first. Anyway.
Yes, Andy.
From somebody who looks at design review and has to enforce guidelines that were developed years ago, any ambiguity, anything, if you're going to go through design, you say what pitch you want the roofs to be.
Really?
You go through those things. If you go into colors or textures or things, they'll twist it. I would spend hours all the time going through review of the newer things. So, I mean, you need to be specific. If you're going to go to that level.
We don't want to tell people what color to paint their house.
Except that we are going to make sure that we have that language in here that if you're living in a place that has design standards established, like Old Town, that's pretty prescriptive, and it tells you those kinds of details. So
Okay.
Well, I think that. You covered those things that were hanging out. Did anyone have anything else that, you know, we haven't spent a lot of time on 1850, and so we spent most of our time on the 80s. I didn't know if anybody had anything that they wanted to address kind of workshop in 1850, or if you were comfortable taking the public testimony.
I think the last at the work study group, there you go.
Okay.
When we came in, I think
I've got a question, though. Looking actually at the draft ordinance, on page 2, under, well, it says, now, therefore, the city council, blah, blah, blah. It talks about 18.30.040, and you say accessory building, colon, 26 feet. And then you deleted the no greater than the height of the primary. Doesn't there need to be some more words in there? Like, the height of the structure shall not exceed 26 feet or something.
Well, David's going to do that.
He's going to
redo it.
Because it's substituted.
What we're telling you is that that's the zoning district.
Yeah.
And that right now the zoning district has that language, that 26 feet for the height of the primary structure, whichever is less.
Right. I'm just looking at it. I'm just looking at it strictly from, it's not a complete sentence.
Okay.
So that's all I'm saying.
I think,
David will work on that. Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So what about 1850? Yeah. On number 5. So they have storage sheds, playhouses, they added decks, patios, cabanas, porches, gazebos, garden sheds, greenhouses, and incidental household storages. But they crossed out swimming pools workshops.
We added those in their own line.
Number 10 is
swimming pools.
Is swimming pools.
And the reason why
and 8 is workshops.
Yeah. Oh, I see it, yeah.
And the reason why we pulled those out, or why I felt that it would be good to pull those out, is because 10 swimming pools, they have a little more stuff that has to be part of it.
More elaborate. What is considered swimming pool? Hot tubs, spas.
And they have that fencing, that fencing requirement.
Kiddie pools don't count.
You can drown in a teaspoon of water.
So with these accessory uses and structures, one thing that was missing that David picked up on as he asked the question, do you have a limit to how many accessory structures you're going to allow? The answer is, and this is about this.
You mean within the city?
No, within a lot. Do you have a garage?
So if they have an acre.
And a tennis court, and a, you know, how many are you? And I hadn't really thought
that's
about
a good
that.
Thing.
We haven't been limiting that.
Yeah, that would be hard to do with the amount of options you have, right? We'd have to think of. We have to do the math. There's some multiplication tables there we'd have to figure out.
Right, but my fix to that is just that I think what we were missing is that we didn't have that section under general provisions that says it has to be, they can have as many as they want to as long as they're meeting the requirements of the underlying zone for building coverage and setbacks and things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was, I'm glad you pointed that out, because we didn't really specify that in this language.
Yeah, as long as they're meeting setbacks and coverage, I think they're fine.
As a policy body, you know, if you wanted to limit them, that's just something that Ted could talk about.
That'd be hard to do, right? Because let's say somebody's got a big lot, so they've got a shop out there, but they've also got a
tennis court.
a tennis court and a swimming pool. And while there's a little shed by the swimming pool, right, for the equipment and stuff.
We're seeing a lot of that in these new developments.
Or a little patio, right?
Yeah, sport courts.
Yeah.
We're seeing
basketball court. We'd have to. I can envision us doing like whiteboarding a bunch of multiplication tables. Yeah. If it's eighth to the third power.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not doing that.
No, exactly. Yeah. There's too many derivatives that we could come up with.
Yeah.
I'm going along with science.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your
work.
Yeah,
thanks, Rob.
Yeah.
Make a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Being
adjourned.
That's my picture. It's a 40-foot container.